This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick, in for Joshua Johnson today. Joshua will be back tomorrow, but unless you've been living under a rock this past week, you'll know about the New York Times op-ed and the claims made by its anonymous writer, or maybe writers. What did the author or authors mean by deep state? We've heard the president use it on a regular basis, talking about the forces pushing current DOJ investigations against him. NPR's Mara Liasson described the deep state as a supposedly shadow cabal of opposition bureaucrats buried deep within the government. Well, President Trump has called the deep state a threat to democracy, and he's not the only one.
By the way, the claim that everything will turn out okay because there are people inside the White House who secretly aren't following the president's orders... That is not a check. I'm being serious here. That's not how our democracy is supposed to work. These people aren't elected. They're not accountable. They're not doing us a service.
Yet another president who has a problem with people in the president's orbit not following his orders. So what exactly is the deep state? Does it even exist? More on that after this.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Capital One. When designer Bev Yang and her team were creating new features for the CreditWise app, they started by researching how people interact with their credit reports.
We realized that most people only wanted to know what's changed. So we'll send you an alert anytime we see that anything meaningful changes on your TransUnion or Experian credit report.
CreditWise sends credit alerts from two credit bureaus for free. Whether you're a Capital One customer or not, you can find CreditWise in your app or Play Store now.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, and on the latest TED Radio Hour, how to talk about death candidly.
Being able to accept that someday I will decompose, there is something comforting to me about that.
You can find the TED Radio Hour wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now, my first guest joins from Buffalo, New York. Michael Caputo is a former Trump campaign advisor and a Republican strategist. Michael, it's great to have you on 1A.
Thank you, Todd. Thanks for inviting me.
Glad we've got you there. We're going to be hearing from more voices later in this hour tackling the idea of the deep state. But Michael, I want to start with you. Let's just get basic. Is this thing real? Is there really a so-called deep state?
Short answer, yes, I believe so. And I believe so mostly because my family has fallen victim to it. But, you know, I've heard about this for my entire life. I mean, certainly since I began my career in politics in Washington back in the 80s, we heard, they called it the establishment, the beltway elite. You know, there are a lot of different words for it. Only recently did people start calling it the deep state. And I kind of recoiled at that name because to me it sounded a little bit conspiratorial, etc. You know, and I had spent 7 years in the 90s living and working in Russia where a deep state really did exist. And so for me, to actually think that we had a cabal like that in our country that was comparable to what's going on in Moscow for, you know, a century, it was like a step too far for me.
Your family, but nowadays, Michael, your family has fallen victim to it. How?
Well, you know, this whole I consider the Russia collusion investigation to be bogus. And, you know, I have been drawn in as a witness in the House and the Senate and in the Mueller investigation. That's very expensive. You know, I live in a small village outside of Buffalo, New York. My family, we don't make Washington money or New York money, but we needed a Washington level lawyer to represent me in these proceedings. And that has wiped out my family's finances and caused immeasurable damage that to our family in many different ways. And I believe that this, you know, the Washington elite, the deep state, as you might call it nowadays, is behind this. And they don't care what kind of damage they leave in their wake.
Now, see, right away, here's the problem, because you feel and you're not yet proven wrong that the Mueller investigation is part of a conspiratorial deep state out to bring down the president and the Caputo family and others associated with him. There are lots and lots of people, many Americans, a majority of Americans, Michael, don't view this as a secretive government conspiracy. They view it as a respected investigator, former director of the FBI, Robert Mueller, with impeccable credentials, investigating potential crimes obstruction of justice, and potential collusion with people in a presidential campaign with a hostile power, and that's serious.
Indeed, it's serious. And I you know, as this has gone along, I've kind of learned to separate the two. The Mueller investigation is, I think, quite different from the investigation that was going on for about a year before that, even longer if you think about the Manafort investigation that was going on for years before the president even came down that escalator in 2015 to declare his candidacy. When I say, you know, when I refer to the deep state, I really refer to these FISA warrants that were put together with what I consider to be falsified information, you know, the collusion between the reporters, like, you know, Michael Isikoff and the FBI, where they were, you know, planting via a Fusion GPS a story with Michael Isikoff that was then used to put together a FISA warrant. You know, when I don't believe that Bob Mueller is an animal of that whole what I consider to be deep state cabal trying to stop the president from winning election. You know, Mueller, I have a lot of respect for him. I'm starting to lose respect for him, but, you know, because of what's happening to my family. But I really believe that, you know, if you want to talk about the deep state, and I still cringe at the term, I believe that happened for years before Mueller, and he's benefiting from some of the information that was gleaned by those people.
Well, I'm still having a little bit of trouble with the definition of what exactly the deep state is, but I think we're going to get to it. Let's hear from the president himself. He was in Montana this past week. He mentioned the deep state, and Michael, I think he largely agrees with you.
Unelected deep state operatives who defy the voters to push their own secret agendas are truly a threat to democracy itself. And I was so heartened when I looked. I think it's backfired. Seriously, people that don't exactly dig us and they don't exactly like me, they're fighting for us. It's an incredible, it's actually a beautiful thing.
Michael Caputo, the president there was referring to the New York Times op-ed in which the writer tells the American audience that there are people at the highest levels of the government who aren't exercising a deep state, but a steady state, fighting against what they call the president's worst impulses. I think most people have read that op-ed by now. What was your reaction when you read that piece in the New York Times?
Well, my first reaction when I read that piece is, first, it's a confirmation that there is a deep state. And in fact, it's changed, you know, kind of at that point when the New York Times decided to publish that op-ed into a rather in-your-face state. It's no longer burrowed deep and working quietly. They're announcing their intentions for all to see. So from my perspective, this is perhaps the same cabal that's been, you know, secretly moving the levers of things inside Washington. You know, I saw some of that when I was living and working there. You know, the Georgetown Salon parties, the things that, you know, that defy party labels. I mean, I don't think that this is a Democrat thing or a Republican thing. I think this is a Washington elite thing. And by the way, if this is going to happen to Donald Trump, this is going to happen to Bernie Sanders or anybody that is outside of the norm that is accepted by these folks who have their face in the trough and refuse to stop feeding on it.
Well, and I'm glad you said that, Michael, because this is part of the difficulty I have with identifying exactly what a deep state is. On the one hand, it's a secretive cabal, often in the national security establishment, working to undermine the president, make sure he loses elections or make him look bad. On the other hand, this is just a normal, maybe unfortunate side effect of big bureaucracies. People who've worked in the government for 25, 30 years have a collective idea of how to keep the government on the rails, and they don't always follow maybe the letter of presidential directives. I mean, that's called a big bureaucracy, not a conspiracy.
Well, you call it what you want, but the fact of the matter is the New York Times op-ed confirmed that it exists and confirmed that they're trying to thwart the president's own designs. The people of the United States did not vote for these unelected bureaucrats who were hiding behind their positions and anonymously declaring their presence in the New York Times. And I think, you know, while this op-ed was placed, I don't think the timing was by accident. I believe the op-ed was placed and published and has been publicized so much because they want to try to have an impact on the midterm elections. From my perspective, and I think many people's perspective, this group that surrounds the president. I don't think it's one person. I think it's several people. I think I know who it is, and I think I know some of the people, the players that are working with this person. But, you know, they're trying to make sure that the Republicans lose the House.
Even though it seemed fairly clear from the writing, if you take it on its face, that this writer was a conservative Republican.
I think that the ghostwriter of this, I don't believe that the person behind this, the signer of the op-ed, wrote this. I believe the ghostwriter behind this was trying to make it sound as conservative as possible. It was also duplicitous. Well, first of all, I think across the board, in the green rooms I've been in since this op-ed was published, from Democrats to Republicans to independents, many agree that this is a cowardly move. That somebody, if you disagree so vehemently with the president that you are serving, you stand up, you walk away, and you speak up. Like, for example, Bill Clinton, when he passed welfare reform, which was a very controversial initiative inside his administration. I think three of his top advisors quit, one of them very close to him, and spoke out very loudly and very critically of the program. That's what you do in American democracy. I believe this was cowardly. But at the same time, I believe it's diabolical, because if you look at this op-ed, it's very carefully written. I've been ghostwriting op-eds for politicians and CEOs for 30 years. I know this when I see it. For example, you remember, Todd, that people were talking about the word lodestar being in there. Now, how that's a common word in Vice President Pence's parlance. But also in there was the word first principles. If you search up all the speeches of the closest advisors to the president, they only turn up in General Mattis's speeches. And then you see the words off the rails, which were credited by Woodward to General Kelly. So this person is not only writing an op-ed to state their case, they're trying to cast blame on others so they can hide. But at the same time, they're gaslighting the president, because they're trying to convince the president that Mattis, Kelly, and others, his closest advisors, Mattis, Kelly, and Pence, are conspiring against him.
This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick, sitting in for Joshua Johnson. We're talking about the deep state with Michael Caputo, former Trump campaign advisor and Republican strategist. And I want to bring in some additional voices now to the conversation, help bring a broader perspective to the discussion of the deep state. From an NPR studio in New York is Tim Weiner. Tim is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. He's also author of Enemies, A History of the FBI, and Legacy of Ashes, The History of the CIA. Hi, Tim.
Hello.
Good to talk to you again. And from a studio at Harvard is Juliet Kayyem. She's a former assistant secretary at the Department of Homeland Security and professor at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Juliet, hello to you.
Hello to you.
And many of you have been reaching out to us. Russell in Kentucky tweeted, "What bothers me, President Trump didn't seem to be aware of the palace coup. Is he really that out of touch?" And Mike in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, emailed us, "Given the vicissitudes of our current commander-in-chief, one can only hope that the deep state is up to the job of keeping the country on the rails." Dan wrote to us on Facebook, "The deep state is people in government who will do anything to keep their job and their funding, even if it's against the will of the people." And Jabo wrote us on Facebook, "The deep state are the Rothschild family and the World Bank and the Federal Reserve, the IMF, and the mainstream media." And that deep state sounds like a familiar broad characterization of the deep state as an international conspiracy of finance, the media, and Jews. And that's a familiar one to me. Tim Weiner, you heard Michael Caputo talking about his impressions of the deep state operating behind President Trump and other presidents as well. What did you think about what you heard?
Well, I think we need to define our terms, because there's a lot of sloppy discourse surrounding the concept of the deep state. To Trump, it is a cabal of military and intelligence officers secretly manipulating the body politic, and it's still being run by leaders of the American intelligence community who served under President Obama, along with unnamed sinister forces resilient within the Justice Department. By the way, the same people who discovered and revealed the brazen covert operation run by Vladimir Putin and his spy services to help elect Trump in 2016. And to the president, they are not defending the republic, but running a slow-rolling coup d'etat.
Juliet Kayyem, you've been listening as well. Your definition of the deep state, or how it operates?
So I think the deep state is really an elastic label that you actually have to look at the speaker to determine what the deep state is. And picking up on what Tim said, you know, I think it's gotten its modern parlance in the last couple years because President Trump uses it as a way to describe essentially just critics. I mean, you even heard it in Caputo's thing that, you know, it's the people who are sort of critical of Donald Trump. So it sort of takes on this like mythic entity. And I think the irony, of course, is in the last week, if one were to even believe that there's a deep state, you know, sort of an entity that that challenges Trump from within, that deep state is his. I mean, in terms of the New York Times op-ed. Now, I heard, you know, there's this whole idea that it's just a ghostwriter, that there's like someone behind whoever wrote the New York Times op-ed, which I think actually suggests how somewhat absurd the notion that the deep state is undermining Trump is, because you just keep having to go, you know, further down conspiracy theories to justify or to explain what's going on. And the only actual real explanation is that Trump's inner circle, the people that he chose, these are his cabinet secretaries, this is his senior staff, they are the ones who are, at least in his mind, undermining his agenda. And I think that the proof of it was in the op-ed, and certainly some of the stuff we're reading out of the Woodward book.
Well, I want to play a voicemail from one of our 1A listeners who's called us from down south.
This is Ken. I'm a civil servant from Houston. There is no deep state. That's pure paranoia. There's no possible way a large organization like that could keep itself secret. Just look at our government. You are the government. We are the government. It's of the people, by the people. No deep state.
Mike Caputo, he says no deep state, and he should know because he works in the federal government. And it goes back to this question of what you think the deep state is. Is it an organized conspiracy to undermine Donald Trump and the rights of all Americans? Or is it just anything you don't like about the way the government operates? If it's not responsive enough to your vote or to the people, that must be the deep state.
Well, if you still today believe there is no deep state, then you haven't read the New York Times. The New York Times op-ed confirmed that there are people working anonymously in the Trump administration to stop the president and his policies. And in fact, if you look at the timing of this, you have to understand that they're trying to impact external things like the midterm elections. If the president loses the House, if the Republicans lose the House, the Democrats are most certainly going to impeach him. And by the way, if you think that the president is safe with a Republican Senate, I think you're dreaming. I believe if we lose the House, the president could be gone before summer of next year. But also, I think it's important to step back for a minute and understand that, you know, Bernie Sanders Democrats are going to face the same kind of thing. If they believe that that they'll be able to be elected to leadership in Washington and they won't face the same pushback from the people who are inside the government and some outside the government, I guess, who don't like the way that Bernie Sanders wants to run things, they've got another thing coming. I mean, any outsider, Trump, Sanders, the establishment is going to stop at nothing to maintain the status quo.
Tim Weiner, what about the concept of a deep state? Because it isn't new. This might be the first time we've heard a president of the United States talk about it repeatedly and in such conspiratorial tones. But there are nations across the world that have deep states of their own, certainly big bureaucracies. What's the history here?
There are authoritarian states in the world. I would cite Turkey, Pakistan, Egypt, where the concept of a deep state manifests itself in coups, in cabals of military and intelligence officers. In the United States, going back to the 19th century, there's always an other out there. It's the Freemasons. It's the Illuminati. It's the Elders of Zion, and the paranoid style in American politics has become the sociopathic style of Donald Trump today. You could argue that when J. Edgar Hoover walked the earth, there was an unelected official who used secret information to warp and affect the body politic. We will not see his like again. We do not have his like today. And Trump, since before his inauguration, has been attacking the intelligence community as Nazis, as stormtroopers. The deep fear of the president is that they have something on him. And I think they do.
Paul in Peoria emailed us, shame on you for trying to normalize the paranoia of the right. Give these people a tinfoil hat and show them the door. That's from Paul. Juliet Kayyem, what about that notion? Because there is one idea that this is all just conspiratorial thinking. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, Mike Caputo raises a very good point. The New York Times op-ed is there for all to see, and those are people at the highest level of government, they say, acting in contravention of the president.
Right, but they're his people. I mean, so the idea of the deep state, even if, like, you know, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt and get out of the conspiracy theory, is actually a notion that there are these unnamed non-political forces within the intelligence and military apparatus that are essentially slow rolling any decision that the president wants or undermining it. And, you know, and there have been debates about this. The idea that you're going to use that someone would use the New York Times editorial as an example of the deep state. No, it's an example of really bad management and bad leadership by the president of the United States, because either he is as bad as the editorial says, in other words, his incapacity to govern effectively, to understand policy, to follow through, or he has intimate team members, right? His people, let's not forget that, who are so concerned about his behavior that they either will speak to a reporter or do an op-ed. And it's important to note, like, that why I don't buy this notion of the deep state is because it's, you know, 5 minutes ago, right, this conservative rhetoric was that there's this bureaucracy that can't get anything done, and Donald Trump is going to come in and fix it, and they're all bunglers, and it's all chaos in there. And then all of a sudden, because Donald Trump cannot govern effectively, now all of a sudden that same bureaucracy is able to plan some complex scheme to undermine him. I don't think anyone should buy it. I think the modern use of the term deep state, which has, you know, historical meaning, the modern term is simply a shield for Trump's failures as a leader and his capacity to govern as president of the United States.
Jayberg Vegas reached us on Twitter and said, deep state? You mean the people he hired? That's a sentiment, Juliet, that I think that you would agree with. Juliet, you were a political appointee in the Department of Homeland Security. That's the national security establishment. Do you have any firsthand experience of deep state-like behavior, public servants just resisting or going against presidential orders?
I mean, what you're always going to get is the tension, and you're going to get two types of tension. So it's worth describing, because I've also always worked in an agency, never at the White House. You're going to get two types of tension. One is between the political appointees, so I'm at the Department of Homeland Security, and the apparatus that's there throughout government. So, you know, whether it is a change in policy that they have to adapt to, that you have to, you know, explain to them, and you see those changes in policy even with the Trump administration, say on border issues. You're also going to get a second type of tension, which is also natural, and it's sort of built into our constitutional structure, which is the tension between a White House and its agencies. It is not every political appointee in an agency complains about the White House of the president that they work for, right? You're just going to be tensions because the White House is looking at things, you know, from a political perspective, from an interagency perspective. So those natural tensions are built into our governance structure. They're not a deep state. They are actually reflective of a government that has to function through elections and expertise that is built over the years, well past a 2 or 4 year political term.
Let's just take a breath for 1 second so that I can tell listeners this is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick sitting in for host Joshua Johnson. Tim Weiner, what about the decisions hiding in plain sight that they go under the rubric of deep state? I'm talking about, let's say, the Pentagon, where we've read lots of reports lately of Pentagon brass and political leadership slow walking or pushing back on the president's orders concerning transgender people in the military and the ban. Or if you read Bob Woodward's book, the president yelling down the phone at his Secretary of Defense, "Let's kill Bashar al-Assad." And Mattis says, "Yes, sir," and then hangs up the phone and just says, "Yeah, we're not doing that. That's awful judgment." Is that a deep state, or is that just resistance in plain sight?
Todd, what afflicts us is not a deep state, but a shallow and corrupted government run by a president who violates his oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution, who is under criminal investigation on a multitude of fronts, and you have the state represented in part by military officers who are also sworn to protect and defend the Constitution. Failing to execute a presidential order, whether it's barked out or tweeted at 4 o'clock in the morning, is in a noble tradition. Resignations and protest are rare in this day and age, but resistance to an order that is illegal, such as assassinating a foreign leader, no matter how despicable that leader may be, is part of the American tradition.
Michael, I want you to respond to what Tim has to say. He's basically saying, none of this or very little of this would be necessary if we didn't have a president issuing illegal orders who wasn't under legitimate investigation, both criminal and potentially with national security implications, and who hasn't completely destroyed many of the norms of normal democratic government.
Well, of course, I'm going to respectfully disagree with Tim. I think a lot of these investigations are illegitimate, and I think they've grown out of the deep state. And of course, I would. I'm being hauled in as a witness in those. But at the same time, I think you're missing one important point. You know, I understand that there's a certain amount of a mirth behind. These are the president's people. But, the president, I've known the president since 1988. I worked with the president closely since 2013. And when I was in Washington last week, I try to avoid Washington as much as possible, but I was there last week. And I sat with some friends of mine from the Trump campaign. And it was interesting for me to note that they'd all been moved out of the administration and they could not find additional positions in the administration and were not even getting their telephone calls returned. There has been an organized and effective campaign to keep Trump people away from certain positions. And also to recruit people who are part of this kind of like nullification project into key positions so that they could do what they're doing and what has been announced in the New York Times. I mean, I believe that there are people that were put in place and people that have long been in place who are now working together in order to nullify the results of the 2016 election. You know, Tim and Julia and others, you may not like the President of the United States, but he was elected democratically and fairly. And if you support this kind of steady state coming in and trying to stop the president, in fact, to try to remove the president, I would say look back in history and remember that the words steady state were used when people were trying to replace Abraham Lincoln. This is not new in history, and it's not unique to the United States. It goes back centuries. Steady state is an excuse for the deep state and an excuse for nullifying the results of the 2016 election.
Hold the line 1 second, okay. Tim, because we're going to take a break and then I'm going to come to you right after we're done. I do want to say that Larry in Washington says, "I doubt the deep state exists, but the Times op-ed was written by a senior Trump administration official, a political appointee. The deep state is described as being composed of career civil servants and not political appointees." Maybe a distinction we can dig into there. Stay close. I'm Todd Zwillick. This is 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Planet Money tip number 17. A great analogy doesn't have to make sense.
Busier than a one-legged bobcat covering up his own crap on a frozen pond.
Didn't you just make that up?
Well, yeah.
Planet Money, a poetic podcast about the economy. This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick, sitting in for Joshua Johnson. We're talking about the concept of the deep state, if there really is one, and if so, how it functions. I'm talking with Tim Weiner, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of Enemies, A History of the FBI, and also Legacy of Ashes, The History of the CIA. Also, Juliette Kayyem, former assistant secretary at the Department of Homeland Security and currently professor at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. And Michael Caputo, former Trump campaign advisor and Republican strategist. Tim Weiner, you wanted to react to what Michael had to say before the break, characterizing the concept of the deep state and trying to undermine President Trump and his reelection.
We are here. We are having this discussion because of a Russian intelligence operation that disrupted American democracy and helped elect Donald Trump. When the head of the FBI, Jim Comey, and the head of National Intelligence, Jim Clapper, Mike Hayden of the NSA came to Trump and told him about this before the inauguration, Trump realized that his legitimacy was under attack. The FBI, the NSA, the CIA were duty-bound to investigate whether he and members of his team aided and abetted the Russian operation. With this fear, Trump has attempted to undermine the American intelligence community, to attack the FBI, and to attack Robert Mueller, who is in charge of investigating him.
Juliette Kayyem, I want to put that idea to you because long before we knew of the New York Times op-ed, indeed long before the 2016 campaign even reached the point where intelligence chiefs were going to candidates or to the president himself to tell him about the Russian effort to undermine the election, the president was already talking about the deep state. He already knew that some voters around the country would respond to this idea that there is a conspiracy that's out to undermine their interests.
Yes, I mean, but that is consistent with a sort of conspiracy language that Donald Trump has used since even well before he ran for office. I mean, you know, look, the birther movement is a conspiracy, which he essentially started. So, you know, fake news, all of this stuff, you know, it's the language of Donald Trump is a conspiratorial language, which when you actually just try to, you know, drill down and figure out what is going on, it's essentially the language Donald Trump uses to to anyone who criticizes him. So to me, the idea of deep state is just a sort of, you know, no different than, you know, birtherism in some ways. That is just a conspiracy that the president throws out. And I think it's important, Tim's point is just so important. So why has Donald Trump latched on to this theory, the deep state theory, as much as he has fake news? And it's because it's the intelligence and law enforcement apparatus that know exactly or potentially know what happened in the lead up to the election in 2016. And at the beginning, you know, Mr. Caputo, you know, talked about, well, you know, Mueller, you know, is different than the deep state. But that may be true for him, but that's certainly not true for Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump views the investigation into Russian meddling, into our democratic processes, as part of the deep state. And so once you sort of accept that, then it becomes sort of obvious that like fake news, deep state is just as I said, a shield that Donald Trump uses to protect bad management, bad ethics, bad behavior, illegal behavior. You know, fill in the blank. And the idea that we're using the New York Times editorial as some, you know, idea or notion of the deep state is absolutely ridiculous. That is, to me, about Donald Trump's team and not some, you know, outside team that's trying to take him down. And the fact that he can't control his own team says a lot both about his capacity to manage, but also his competency in terms of the decisions that he's making.
Michael Caputo, I want you to respond to that very point, that this is the president's own team. And this, more than anything, points up dysfunction among the people that he appointed.
And as I said before, some of those people he appointed were compromise candidates brought to him by people who were looking for an opportunity to stop him and his agenda. And also, just for a quick moment, you know, the idea, you know, first of all, we still have not seen any proof that the Trump campaign has conspired with the Russians. You know, I from the very beginning thought that the hack at the DNC was the Russians. It's something that they do. I still to this day don't understand why the Obama administration did nothing about it.
But Michael, let me stop you there. I have to. Because, look, Robert Mueller hasn't released his report yet. Mm-hmm. But at every turn during this investigation, we've seen a president trying to undermine it on Twitter and down microphones, attacking his attorney general, attacking the investigation, calling it fake, calling it a conspiracy. It gets very, very hard for fair-minded people to disentangle what exactly this is supposed to mean. When coming from the very top of the government, this type of conspiratorial accusation is lobbed on a daily basis.
Right. And you don't have to look any further than the New York Times op-ed page to see that there is something going on. And at the same time, if you look at what the Russians actually did, I believe they did things. Unless they took over the pilot's stick and Hillary Clinton's campaign plane and kept her from landing in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, they did absolutely nothing. Listen, the Washington swamp operators, they ratchet up their stealth maneuvers to discredit this president, from the New York Times op-ed to the Woodward Book to others, and the goal is clear: to create a narrative that the president is unfit so that they can get a Democratic House elected in 2 months and then impeach the president and nullify our 2016 victory. And sadly, some of these players work within the president's own circle. The paradox is that while this crony cabal conspires, our country surges in prosperity and confidence. Recent data reveals, you know, a country thriving under Trump's policies. You know, wage growth is best in 14 years, best growth in production jobs in the last year since 1984. That comes from the Washington Post. And the lowest minority jobless rates ever. But somehow or another, this is not good enough.
Michael, why did Trump officials like Tom Price and Scott Pruitt lose their jobs and have to leave government? Was it because of deep state actors and officials acting against them, or was it because their actions in office were fundamentally corrupt or largely unethical?
I think in the end, just like many people who have left government in many previous administrations, it's because they were making unethical moves. And what they did was right, to leave the administration. If they disagreed with the president, I would have expected them to speak up at that point. They left for unethical, for acting unethically. But I would expect the author of this op-ed and their pals in this government to leave the government as well and to speak up, because what they're doing by publishing this op-ed in the New York Times is not criminal, it's not treason, but it is most certainly unethical.
Tim Weiner, the idea of the deep state may have some analog in the real government, if nothing else, because of the New York Times op-ed, some people at the highest levels of government acting against the president. Now, I know that you don't call that deep state and you don't want it thought of as such, but this idea, the idea of a conspiracy of a deep state has been used to promote some other very, very shady ideas, that mainstream Democrats, for instance, run a child sex ring out of a pizza restaurant in D.C. That was all part of the idea of a deep state. If you want to go back in time, the Clintons murdered Vince Foster back in the 90s, also part of a deep government conspiracy. Some of this has a very, very sinister underside.
A true deep state must have the power to be the puppet master of a democratically elected president. By this definition, you know, even in the depths of the Cold War, the fear of an American deep state was chimerical, was born of secrecy, paranoia, and ignorance. And yet the fear persists. You know, 9/11 was an inside job. Really? Lyndon Johnson killed President Kennedy. The difference I mean, we've always had a mistrust of government, and that's healthy. The difference here is that the President of the United States, who is a pathological liar, is telling the American people that there is a conspiracy within his government to overthrow him. This takes us to a very dangerous point. And we have, for better or for worse, people within the administration who will comply with the president and people who will resist. The resistance, if you will, goes way deep down into the corridors of Republican power. And we will see that after the coming election, when the polarity in Washington shifts, subpoenas start flying, and the president and his people have to testify.
A bit of analysis from Tim Weiner there. Also an election prediction, if you caught it there, predicting that the Democrats indeed will take back the House. We got a voicemail from a listener in the federal government here in Washington, D.C. Listen.
This is Paul. I live in Washington, D.C. and work in Germantown. I work within the federal government. I think there seems to be a lot of confusion, especially put forward by your guest, Michael Caputo, about the difference between somebody that Trump brought in as his advisor, someone to work for him, and bureaucrats who work in the government. He seems to keep convoluting those two things. The op-ed from the New York Times has nothing to do with what people think of as the deep state. That is Trump's team. That is somebody on his team that he brought in directly under him who is not working in concert with him, who is trying to undermine him. That's his problem. That has nothing to do with the federal employees and many of the people in the government who have sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution and serve the American people.
You're listening to 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick, sitting in for Joshua Johnson. Juliette Kayyem, I want you to riff on what Tim Weiner had to say a moment ago. What might change, how the dynamics might change if Democrats take control of the House? We don't know that they will, but the election, the polls, the analysis appears to be pointing that way. How does this discussion of a deep state and what's really going on behind President Trump change if all of a sudden there is subpoena power and oversight on Capitol Hill?
Well, I think, you know, if the Democrats do win, and then, of course, the other if they proceed with impeachment, a lot that is not public may become public, right, through the hearings. People who have been relatively quiet may feel emboldened to speak out about what's going on in the inner circle. People may leave the administration because, boy, do you want to be there, you know, during this period, who then are more free or more able to speak. So I think you'll see I think you'll see more not about the deep state. Once again, the deep state being a sort of fiction created by Donald Trump to explain or dismiss some of his failures, but more I think sort of more transparency about the inner about what's happening in the inner circle. I think this focus on the editorial as an editorial is, you know, sort of muting the substance of what was said in the editorial. If half of it is true, we are in a crisis, and it's not a crisis of the deep state. It's a crisis of the capacity of our leadership. And I think anyone who fails to recognize that in some regard is and sort of embraces this deep state notion is essentially calling everyone a member of the deep state, and Donald Trump stands alone as a master of one. And we know certainly that's not how a constitutional democracy works.
Well, Juliette, what do you take as the big message of the op-ed? Is it one of crisis and that?
Oh, yeah.
One of crisis for sure, and that the writer says, well, it's not a deep state, it's a steady state. We're trying to keep the government on the rails because the president is amoral and impulsive. But there's another interpretation as well, which is that lots of people associated with Donald Trump may think that the walls are closing in on this presidency. If not now, maybe his legacy won't be any good, and they want to protect themselves in the annals of history and point to this.
Or it may be both. You know, I mean, it may be a self-preservation as you start to see the ability for Donald Trump to retain some semblance of a steady state deteriorate. Look, the editorial is another piece, another data point in data points that have been screaming at us since 2016, whether it's the line about the Russian contacts with the administration, the line by Donald Trump Jr., the Jared Kushner, the tweets, the Woodward book, the other books. I mean, the editorial is not like it came out of the blue. The editorial's a power is that it reinforces what we just can figure out by reading Twitter. This morning, I will just tell you, this is the 15, I don't know how many he's done, 15 tweets that the president has done as the largest hurricane is barreling down on the United States. And you tell me whether that is a person that behavior is any different than what we've already read about. No, it's consistent. And so the editorial to me is just another data point in 2 years of flashing red light.
We're about to go. Michael Caputo, I'm going to give you the very last word, and it has to be a short one. I want to go back to something you said at the top of the show. You think you know who wrote that op-ed. Mm. Who?
I'm not going to reveal that. I think that the president is going to figure that out himself. I've tried to advise the White House on that, but I want you to know that op-ed is about as serious as it can get. It's a direct attack on the office of the presidency. And I believe that the people that should take heed of this are not just Trump supporters, but supporters of Bernie Sanders and Democratic Socialists like him and any other outsider like Trump. The establishment will stop at nothing to maintain the status quo. And this, in effect, is a coup.
I want to thank our guests who joined to talk about the deep state and how far it penetrates, if not into the Oval Office, into the American government. Michael Caputo, former Trump campaign advisor and Republican strategist. Michael, thank you.
Thank you.
Juliette Kayyem, former assistant secretary at the Department of Homeland Security and professor at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Juliette, it's always nice to talk to you. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
And Tim Weiner, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and author of Enemies, A History of the FBI, and also Legacy of Ashes, The History of the CIA. Tim, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
And I want to thank all of you 1A listeners who took the time to reach out and made this discussion really everything that it should be, especially those of you who work within the government and have firsthand experience about whether the deep state is really a conspiracy of people trying to undermine the president or just maybe a big bureaucracy of people who've worked there for 20 years and have an idea about the way the government should run. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. I'm Todd Zwillick, sitting in for Joshua Johnson. And don't worry, Josh is back tomorrow. This is 1A.